Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Royal Oak, Michigan, and earned a BS degree in physical science from the U.S. Naval Academy, and was a three-year letter winner in football. He served our nation in the Marine Corps in active duty for 9 years and as a reservist for an additional 20. Since 2011, he's been a general supervisor at General Motors for dangerous goods. Famous for his Domanisms, his name, Colonel Tom Doman, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And on this Happy New Year's evening, we welcome you and we welcome Colonel Tom Doman. Colonel, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Jack, I am thrilled to be here. It's my honor to be here, honored to be asked to come on to your show. I know a lot of your guests before have been on your show, and I'm totally thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
You grew up in Royal Oak, one of 10 kids. You were the special one. Tell us about mom and dad. Mom passed at 87 in September. Dad is 90, still living. Tell us about mom and dad.
Well, if there's two people that shaped my life from my birth, is my mom and dad. To raise 10 kids, 9 boys, 1 girl, you got to be special. And you have to be selfless. You have to think about the family first. And mom and dad were those people. My mom, she was a saint. She would work until the wee hours of the night washing clothes, only to get up the next morning to make 10 kids' lunches. She would pull out 2 loaves of bread, and the first loaf was the bottom of the sandwich, and after she put down bologna and cheese, the next loaf was the top of the sandwich. And my dad worked 6 days a week, 40 years after he got out of the Army Air Corps, World War II, and he worked for Ford. And you know what? We had a great childhood, and those two being part of the greatest generation, it's no wonder how well we all turned out.
Mom and Dad were a team for 65 years, and Mom passed in September. She served God, your dad, and her 10 children for 87 years. You gave Mom's eulogy.
Yeah, yes, I did.
Colonel, what did you say?
You know, and you got to get me emotional here, Jack, because my mom's a special person. My mom was... her sister, Margaret, Aunt Margaret, said she was just pure goodness. She would always look at the positive of everything that you did. She supported us, and it wasn't asking why or why'd you do that. It was, how can I make you better? If you were crying or you're a little kid, she would comfort you. And I remember one of my brothers said that he ran in and he was having a bad day, and just the comfort of my mom's hug made it all better. We would tell Mom, I need 2 dozen chocolate chip cookies in the morning as we left for the to walk to school, and she'd have to whip them up and run to school, because we had committed to giving that for a class party or something. But, you know, my mom, we always referred to her as, in A Wonderful Life, as Donna Reed. She was that person that gave everything she had to the family, and she was the glue.
We're talking to Colonel Tom Doman with the Marines. Tom, you were an All-American high school football player at Shrine, and you were recruited by the Naval Academy, Annapolis, to play football. How tough is it to get nominated to one of our service academies?
Well, it is extremely tough. And truth be told, Jack, I went to a interview with a lot of other great, talented seniors, and I didn't get nominated. And I told the head coach or the coach that was recruiting me, Bobby Morrison, I said, "Coach, I didn't get a nomination." And he said, "Well, what do you think about NAPS, which is Naval Academy Preparatory School?" And this is a true story. I'm on the phone, and back then there was a rotary dial phone, and my mom is in the kitchen washing the floor. And he says, "You're going to have to go to a preparatory school." So I put the hand over the phone, and I looked at my mom, and she's washing the floor, and she says, "Tell him you're going to Air Force." And I go, "What? I don't want to go to Air Force." I know our president-elect Trump was the art of the deal, but you know what? My mom, at that point, she was a deal maker, and she said, "Tell him you're going to the Air Force." So I took my hand off the phone receiver, and I said, "Coach, I appreciate your time, but I'm going to go to Air Force." He goes, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, this is on a Friday." He goes, whoa, stop. "Give me till Monday, and then make your decision." And as the story comes out, on Monday morning, he found a nomination from a congressman in New Mexico, and I therefore got the Naval Academy.
Mom was the Donald before there was the Donald.
That's right.
Okay. Tom, tell us about the Naval Academy.
Well, the Naval Academy, everybody asks me, what did you learn at the Naval Academy? And I will tell you, it's just one word, to prioritization. You have 5 pounds of stuff that has to go in a 2-pound bag every day, and you have to throw 3 balls up in the air, and you have to prioritize what is going to affect your life that day. You have to jam in all this information. When they first get you there, Jack, they give you a book called The Reef Points. It's a very small book, but it's very small print, and it's all the naval sayings, the naval laws, all the ships, all the tanks, all everything in the naval service is in that book. And every day you get quizzed on, "Give me all the battleships. Give me all the destroyers. Give me all the planes." And you have to regurgitate it. If not, you get yelled at, and you gotta learn fast. And then you couple that. That was just plebe summer. Then you couple that with grades. You're taking 18, 21 hours a year, or excuse me, a semester. And then on top of that, I was playing varsity football. You know what, Jack? It was incredibly tough. And it was I had a lot of failure at the Naval Academy.
Let's talk about grades. 4 weeks into your first semester, your plebe year, your first report card comes out. You've got 2 Fs, 2 Ds, 2 Cs. Your GPA is a 1.04. Doman. What'd you tell Mom that day?
Oh, I had a ritual. I'd go to class, and then on Sunday, I would go to church, and then in Ricketts Hall, and then I would go to brunch because it was kind of just 2 meals instead of one on Sunday. And I remember going into, if you can believe this, Jack, a phone booth to call my mom and dad and said, "You know what? I'm probably coming home." And my dad, who's got great set bedside manner, he said, "You know what, son? All you have to do is, if you can look the guy in the mirror to say that you gave it all you got," he says, and it still doesn't work out, he says, "Come on home. We can find a place for you to go to college." And that's what I needed. I didn't need sympathy. I needed maybe a little kick in the pants to say, "You know what? Work harder."
And it worked. By the end of the first semester, Colonel Doman was a 2.21 GPA.
That's correct.
Okay. 1,400 started with him. 4 years later, 1,073 graduated. We'll talk about one or two of those in addition to him when we come back. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Colonel Tom Doman, who's famous for his Domanisms. Okay, one of your classmates was known, or is known now, as the Admiral.
Absolutely, Dave Robinson.
Tell us about Robinson.
Well, we were all in 14th Company together, and 14th Company was 7-4, so we looked upon Seven River and the Chesapeake Bay, and Dave and I lived next to each other for 3 years, and he's one of these guys that was just naturally smart. His dad was an electronic technician in the Navy, and he taught him all about electrical engineering, which was a class that everyone took your sophomore year or youngster year. And so Dave never had to study because he already knew this stuff. And, you know, he played basketball and he would play, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays. And I remember this one time we had a midterm test and he said, hey, we just had a double overtime win against Richmond. Can you wake me up at 2 a.m? And that's how you did it. You slept for a little bit. You woke up. You studied. And I woke him up at 2 a.m. because I just can't get up. I need to roll over. And if he gets a B, I get a C. I mean, I'm studying all night, drinking Mountain Dew like it's cool. And he gets up and he gets a B. So, but I tell you, what a genuine, genuine man he is. He is unbelievable, and the stuff he's done in San Antonio. And a case in point, when we got back for our 25th class reunion, I introduced him to my son. And he treated him like it was his own son. I mean, Dave said, Tommy D, where you been? I said, I'm right here. Here's my son, Tommy. Here's my wife, Jamie. And he took him. And Tommy actually used those pictures for a class report. And he was just totally thrilled to meet David Robinson.
In your senior year, Tom, at the Naval Academy, you choose the Marines. Why?
Well, this might sound funny, but I always told my mom that they have the best uniforms. And, of course, that didn't go over very well. But my first introduction to the Naval Academy was Captain Dave Papak. And he ended up being Brigadier General Dave Papak. And he was the nose guard of the defense team that held Tony Dorsett in his Heisman year underneath 100 yards. And General Papak was such an influence in my life that, the way he carried himself, the way he wore his uniform. And at the Naval Academy, the Marines just were a cut above. And, you know, quite frankly, when you look at the Marines, you look at teamwork. It's athletic. Whether you're marching 25 miles, whether you have 100 pounds on your back, it's very physical. And when you look at the Marines, I love the saying, right? The few, the proud. We're not looking for the masses. We're looking for folks that are dedicated to the mission of being a Marine. Period. And you know what? I've been doing it for the last 29 years and just loved every minute of it.
The pride, the lifelong camaraderie. You're a Marine for life. Semper Fi. Why is there this lifelong camaraderie?
Well, when you go through anything, anything in life, just like growing up with 10 kids, unless you grew up with 10 kids, eight brothers and one sister, you really can't relate to what the dinner table was like or what like going to Kmart was like. As a Marine, you get put in the worst places in the world and you're expected to excel and basically turn lemons into lemonade. And, you know, when I went to war twice, when I was over in Iraq, we had these sayings, and we said, no better friend. And we'll give the shirt off your back, whether it be humanitarian aid, whether it be nation building, city building, and then no worse enemy. And no worse enemy is, you know, if that is the will of our leadership in the country, and they turn the Marines into a warrior force, and that's our mission. No worse enemy. We will fight to the death, and we will defend our nation, our nation's constitution, all the citizens within it, and that's just who we are. That's just who we are. And so, you know, for me, you know, going through that together with brothers in arms, that's why it's lifelong, because you've been through those wartime situations, and you can just bond. The bonding is incredible.
Speaking of that bonding, our Secretary of Defense designate is General James Mattis, who's legendary. Tell us about James Mattis.
Well, General Mad Dog Mattis is a Marine's Marine. He is tremendous with his leadership. He takes care of the Marines from the ground up. I'll give you a case in point. He was a general at Quantico on Christmas Eve. He was going through the gate, and he saw a Marine. He asked him how he was doing, and the Marine said, okay, sir, but, you know, my family's at home. It's Christmas Eve, and I drew the short stick. General Mattis at that point said, Marine, go home and see your family. He took over the gate guard as a general, and he was waving cars in, checking IDs, so that Marine could go spend time with his family. General Mattis was always about always about the Marines, but always about training the way you fight. Back in Desert Shield Storm, I was in 2-7, 2nd Battalion, 7th Marines in California. He was 1-7 CO. When they went out to the field, he didn't let anyone, when it got colder, he didn't let anyone take tents and any type of sleeping bags, because he said, listen, that's too heavy. We're not going to fight that way. We got to fight light to travel and travel fast. So all you had was poncho liners and anything that you can carry on your back. And when they got to country and they fought as a battalion, that's all they carried. And you know what his Marines were like? I never had the good stuff, so you know what? This is what I got, and they made do. And that's what Marines do. Whatever we have, we make do with what we have, and we make it, and we achieve our mission.
Marine Corps, active duty, 87 to 95. You fought in two wars, Desert Storm, Iraqi Freedom.
Well, the first one was active duty. I was on a ship, USS Guadalcanal, after the great battle in the Pacific. And that was, you know, we came kind of late to the party. We had already, when it comes to Desert Shield Storm, they already achieved their mission, and now we're into nation building. So we helped the Kurdish refugees come out of the mountains, and we built the city. We pulled into Incirlik, Turkey, and we created villages. So we were constantly providing security and building prefabbed homes for those Turkish to come out of the mountains, because they're freezing in the mountains. Fast forward to Operation Iraqi Freedom, I was a reservist. I was married, I had two daughters, and my son was just born. And I get a call the day before. My daughter Taylor was carrying Tommy down the stairs. She fell back on Tommy's leg, because she had him on her hip, and broke his leg. And we had him in a cast. And all of a sudden, the phone rings the next day and says, this is Lieutenant Colonel Doman. Anytime they call with your rank first, you know that the next sentence isn't going to be good. He says, you're now being activated. Report for duty. And for the next year and a half, I was over in California for a little bit. And then after California, I was pushed forward to replace a Marine that had a situation with his family. And I was over there. And you know, not many people know this, Jack, but I injured my knee. I got operated on my mom's birthday on the 21st of December, and I extended my tour because the CO, he was moved on, the Sergeant Major was moved on, and of the three Marines in leadership, I was the third one. I felt compelled to support my Marines to see the mission through to February. So, you know, it was not a popular decision back home, but I would tell you it was the right decision, and that's what I did.
And we're talking to a man with the right stuff, Colonel Tom Doman. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Colonel Tom Doman. And all of his friends say the man has a huge heart. And Tom, you've got a special spot in that heart for the Star Spangled Banner. Why? And tell us about the Star Spangled Banner.
You know, so oftentimes we hear the Star Spangled Banner before games or... But when you're in the military and the Star Spangled Banner is played, it just takes on a whole new meaning. And when I did some research on the Star Spangled Banner, I realized, and this kind of goes into my you know, Domanisms, the power of one. In Fort McHenry, back in 1814, one of our Americans that were fighting the British at the time, they were bombing Fort McHenry, and back then, very similar to the movie The Patriot, when the flag went down, usually that was the end of the battle. And they were bombing Fort McHenry so much that they went after the flag, which was in the middle of the base. And one of our Patriots grabbed a hold of the base of the flag so it wouldn't fall. So everyone kept fighting. back then we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have, all we had were bugles, and we had flags going up and down to tell people to keep fighting, fight left, fight right. And as they keep bombing the Fort McHenry, the British could not understand why the flag tilted, never fell. And when the clouds and the smoke raised in the morning, as Francis Scott Key was looking through his porthole, because he was on a ship watching this hole, and that's obviously who wrote the Star Spangled Banner, they realized there were hundreds of Americans holding that flag, holding the base of the flag, so it wouldn't fall. Knowing that it was their sheer death going, but they knew there was something bigger. You know, again, one of the things that I talk about is be part of something bigger than yourself. I love the Marines. I love being part of the Marines. I love being part of the Doman family. It's something bigger than who Tom Doman is. And when you do that, when you take the light off of you and put it on others, great things happen.
Domanisms. There's 10 of them. Number 5. Serve as a follower so that you can serve as a leader.
As you go through life, you obviously are part of several teams. In mine, I had great leaders, Mom and Dad. I also had great leaders in my older brothers. I knew what to do and what not to do, especially with bringing the car home later, not with enough gas. That's a whole nother story. But in the Marines, I had great leaders. I had Lieutenant Colonel Parrish. I had Lieutenant Colonel Cohen. I had Navy captains that you learn from and you follow, and you know you put check marks in your brain saying, you know, this is something I want to put in my toolbox to be a leader, and maybe not so much this. Does this fit into my personality? You know, can I pull this off as a leader? And you start to build this repertoire of what type of leader you want to be. Because when I became a colonel and when I became a commanding officer, now you go back to that toolbox and you know what? These things is what comes out in you to your Marines, and it's real. It's not fake. Why? Because it's emotion. It's emotionally charged inside of you when it comes to leadership, and Marines can see that. They can see through a fake leader. And one of the things that I love about leading Marines is that when you get done, and this is something that, do they say, good riddance, Colonel Doman is gone? Or do they say, sir, anywhere you go, you call me. I want to be on your team. And that's what I take. I earn that respect.
Number 8, leaders learn to listen and listen to learn.
Well, I can't stress enough that you have two ears and you have one mouth, and you have to listen twice as much, and you have to listen to the Marines. The Marines will tell you whether or not you're going the right or wrong way. You know, you go through the academy, we went through the basic school, and we learned the basics of how to be a Marine Corps officer and an officer in general at the academy. But I will tell you, it's the sergeants, it's the corporals, it's the gunnies. Gunny Hopkins, when I was commanding officer as a major, you know, he would pull me aside, sir, I think we need to do this. And you got to take that as sage advice because he's been there. He's been with the unit. You just showed up. You got to take that. And, you know, just like any good leader, you take that as input. You put it into your thought process, and then you come out with direction and guidance.
We're talking to Colonel Tom Doman, who's famous for his Domanisms. Number 9, leaders are humbled and take the tough assignments.
I was on a baseball field one Friday night playing catch with throwing baseballs to my son. He was hitting, practicing, and I get a phone call from my commanding general, and he says, I need a favor. So I'm, yes, sir, what can I do for you? And he says, I need you to go to the Baltic Sea and take over Baltops, Baltic Operations 2012. Our colonel is the one that's in charge is in the hospital. We need your help. Roger that, sir. I'm your man. And it happened to be with maritime prepositioning ships, which I spent 3 years at Quantico supporting. And that was in my wheelhouse. But more importantly, the Marines that were part of those units, I had relationships with. And So I said, what do I need to do, sir? And he said, you know what? On Monday, you got a one-star, you got a brief over at Marine Corps Forces Europe, and then you got to do a three-star, and that's a confirmation brief. He gives you thumbs up, thumbs down. He says, everybody is sending their PowerPoints to you. Bone up on it. Get with your staff, and then tell me if you got the go or no go to run Ball Tops 2012. And so it was a crash course, but at the end of the day, I was humbled to be picked, and I was humbled with my staff, and I said, you know what, this is where the metal meets the road, rubber meets the road, and here's where you prove your worth. You're a colonel. Let's take charge.
Number 10, the last one. Leaders embrace the power of one.
The one is one thing that changes the course of an event, changes the course of your life. Whether it be my one set of parents that guided me since I was a little boy up and through who I am today. Whether it's one event, I was over in Turkey, and our ship pulled into a port in Turkey, and we were surrounded by Turkish militia, Turkish army, and they wanted to take us to jail because it was our last day in port, and there was an altercation, and they wanted to see what was going on. And we were in a Jeep, and I was in the front, and there was junior Marines in the back, and this one Marine said, "Sir, this doesn't seem right." And I said, "Well, I don't know how to speak Turkish." And God gave me a little boy, says, in broken English, "I can speak some English." So at that point, I recognized the situation. I jumped out of the car. I told everybody to get out of the Jeep. We walked over to the Turkish officer who had the most gold on his cover and on his shoulders. And I said, "You repeat after me." And I said, "Listen, we're going back to our ship." I said, "You can shoot us in the back, but there's our buses right there. We're going back. This is our last day of leave. We're going back to Desert Shield Storm. This was just a brief moment of relaxation." And we started to walk, and the Turkish troops opened up. We got on our buses, and we got back to the ship safely. And it's recognizing that one thing. A lot of times it's you. That power of one is you. Set yourself up for success and help yourself to understand situations. Don't be full. You know, I have this new acronym. You'll love this, Jack. It's called LEAD. Leave ego at door. When you're full of ego, it's really hard to see everything else around you. When you leave your ego at the door and you go in there humbled, you can see things a whole lot more clearly, and it makes sense, and you can make good, sound decisions.
We're talking to Colonel Tom Doman. Since 2011, he's been a general supervisor at GM for dangerous goods, and he regularly tells his team at GM, quote unquote, "Leave your ego at the door." Scotty Bowman used to tell all of these future Hall of Famers the same thing. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Colonel Tom Doman, who's famous for his Domanisms, the power of one. Tom, since 2011, you've been a general supervisor at GM for dangerous goods. Tell us about the people of GM and the values at GM today.
Well, General Motors is an outstanding corporation, and I couldn't ask for a better team than the Pontiac Regional Distribution Center, led by Kevin Buescher. Kevin has supported everything that I've done with Domanisms, the power of one. I have done many events, and I was wrapping up my Marine Corps career. He always supported me on my service to this nation, to the Marine Corps. When it comes to community service, we bring in students from many high schools in Pontiac. We come in and we talk about success, failures, and we do go through the Domanisms, the power of one. We take them on a tour of the plant, and the UAW chairman, gets up there and talks about the workforce, which we have an outstanding workforce at Pontiac. And, you know, Kevin, through his leadership and the leadership of my peers, all my general supervisors, fellow general supervisors, we've turned that building around since 2011. And now it is a showcase in the Processing Center region that's led by Mark Miller, Denise Rockna, and finally Lisa Viziano. I will tell you, General Motors, when it comes to community outreach, just outstanding. Just outstanding. I can't say enough about them.
Our young people are America's greatest natural resource. Arguably, that's all we've got. Talk to us, Colonel Doman, about the job our young American heroes do today while serving in the military.
Well, the young Marines, the young sailors, soldiers, airmen, they serve, and they serve from their heart, and they give everything they have. I could go through story after story about how Marines help Marines and sailors help sailors. You know, when we first got to Iraq, it was October 2nd, 2004. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was a beautiful, not a cloud in the sky. And we had a vehicle IED go off. And I was a mile and a half away from the explosion, threw me off my seat, and it was a car filled with nothing but bombs. And that was at the Iraqi gate, because we were training Iraqis that day. At the American gate, here comes an ambulance. And these Marines that were literally within hundreds of yards of this explosion, they knew that ambulance, there's no way that they could have attacked or they could have supported that attack that quickly. That was loaded for bombs for us. They went through the rules of engagement. I'm sure their ears were ringing. I'm sure they had headaches. It was an incredible scene of death and destruction. But they had the wherewithal to stop that second attack and protect everybody on the base. We had 10,000 servicemen and women on that base, and they protected them. And it was a great feat of heroism. And we're talking about 19, 20-year-old Marines.
Speaking, Tom, of an unexpected attack, 3 weeks ago, December 8th, was the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Changed the world forever. Maybe the day that innocence was lost.
Gone. Yeah.
And our fathers and grandfathers, moms and grandmothers, overnight were thrust into the greatest generation. And that's who taught us. That's who coached us in Little Leagues, the Girl Scout captains, et cetera, et cetera. We were inundated with those values of the greatest generation. Talk to us about the greatest generation.
You know, my dad was in, he enlisted, and he was in the Army Air Corps, and he was going through flight training down in Texas. And he says, you have to remember that at that time, the Japanese were a well-oiled machine, and they were fighting the Chinese. They were trying to get land for natural resources. And he said, after Pearl Harbor attack happened, he said, we were, I don't want to use the word afraid, but it was going to be a heck of a war with the Japanese, because they were already experienced, and they had many, many years in the 1930s at war with China. He said, when Colonel Doolittle and his raid on Tokyo dropped the bombs, he says that was the absolute number one thing that turned went from apprehension to confidence, that when they reached out and touched us, we reached out and touched them, and they realized that, you know what, we have what it takes to defeat the Japanese. And you said it exactly right, Jack. Everybody in my youth was part of the greatest generations. You know, the my neighbors, the Ebals, the Schlaus, the Pierces, all the folks that were in our neighborhood, they were the folks that shaped me, who I am today, along with my parents and my aunts and uncles. I mean, we had my aunts and uncles over all the time, and they were all part of the greatest generation. And all that shapes who you are.
Speaking of shaping our young, talk to the moms and dads tonight who have young children.
Well, I tell you, I go back to my Dominisms, and I start with my dad and my mom. The first two I always start off with is, do what is right. And my dad would always say when I was younger, if you don't know what's right, come ask me and I'll tell you. And then he said, leave it better than when you found it. And I love that one because it's not, we're not just talking about your job or anything major. I'm talking about when I, and this may sound funny, but when I go walking my dogs on Sunday or Saturday or whenever I walk around and I see trash, I pick it up because I'm doing the right thing and I'm leaving better when I found it. I got to pick up the dog stuff anyway, so I'm picking up the trash because it's my neighborhood. And when you own it as your neighborhood, this is my neighborhood and I take pride of what the neighborhood is, whether it's my house or it's not my house, it's where I live. I also say, take constructive criticism well. So many times everybody doesn't do everything right all the time. I have been shaped by getting constructive criticism, accepting it, making changes within me. And I tell the parents going forward, listen, you know, give that constructive criticism so your kids can learn and get better every day.
As our time winds down, Colonel Lohman, what advice do you give to our young listeners?
Our young listeners is build your bank of relationships. And what do I mean by that? Relationships come in all shapes and all forms. And, you know, this world we live in is about people. Be the best person you can possibly be. When you go to work, when you go to school, when you're on a team, be the best teammate, be the best person to go to work with, and you know, go above and beyond. Okay, it's not all about you; it's about us. And going forward, if you can build your bank of relationships, I will guarantee you, you will withdraw on those relationships later in life, as I have. And if you can't invest in those relationships with people, you're never going to be able to withdraw.
On this New Year's night, where we've all got New Year's resolutions, if we all said, just try to be a little more like Colonel Tom Dome, this country would be very good. Please keep up the great work. Thanks for your service to the country, Tom.
Jack, thank you so much for having me. And God bless everyone, and God bless America.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.